There are so many syndicators out there that are focused on the deal, focus on finding the deal, getting the deal, raising the money, getting it closed, and then celebrating. And Ashley and I very much have a philosophy in the business that closing the deal isn't the time for celebration. That's when the deal starts. That was the easy part. The hard part is the next 3 or 5 years where you actually have to build value. And you have to increase rents, and you have to increase income, and you have to decrease expenses, and you have to make things more efficient.
Your network is your net worth. Come listen to some of the most successful people I know. Share invaluable knowledge, stories, and advice in real estate, business, and beyond. This is Weiss Advice. Whether you want to take your business or personal life to the next level, look no further. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Weiss Advice. I'm your host, as always, Yonah Weiss. Really excited to be sitting down today with none other than Jay Scott. You may know him from Bigger Pockets. He's the host of the Bigger Pockets Business Podcast. He's authored 4 books. You may have come across them on the Bigger Pockets website, the most popular one, the book on flipping houses. We'd love to get into how you came across, you know, and more recently have partnered up with Ashley Wilson, who was an episode on a guest on the Weiss Advice podcast early on. So you have to scroll all the way back to the beginning, doing multifamily deals now. Really excited to speak with Jay. How are you doing today?
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Yonah.
I'm really excited to have this conversation. I mean, we briefly met up on Ashley's meetup not long ago, but I've been wanting to get you on the podcast. In fact, you know, funnily enough, I sent you an email or message on LinkedIn, I think, like about a year ago, and you don't check LinkedIn, so as to my detriment.
Well, on the bright side, talking to you at the meetup and having you present at the meetup, you pushed LinkedIn pretty hard, and it made me realize that I'm missing a great opportunity to be connecting with other investors and colleagues and my audience. And so I've actually started to pay attention to LinkedIn a whole lot more thanks to you, Yonah. So
awesome.
Thanks for that.
That's great. I'd love to hear, you know, after a few months or so, what, if anything, and what it was come out of that, because I've certainly gotten a tremendous amount from, you know, spending even a little bit of time on a consistent basis, whether that's every day or every other day, whatever it is, just posting, engaging, connecting. The network is just incredible.
Yep, agreed.
So you've come from an interesting background. I mean, you started in, let's ask you, like, where did you get started in real estate, and where has that brought you to where you are today?
Yeah, so I my story actually starts before real estate. I come from the tech world, the corporate world. I'm an engineer by education and probably mindset. And I fell into real estate back in 2008 when my wife and I decided to get married, leave the tech world behind and figure out something that was more conducive to raising a family and building a good lifestyle.
Perfect. Perfect time to get into real estate, right?
It was. I never discount how fortunate I was with so many things in my life, and timing is a big part of it. And we like to think that we control everything, but at the end of the day, a lot of it is—I don't want to say luck. We put ourselves in good situations, but a lot of it really is luck. And the fact that I found my wife 2 years before 2008, and we decided to get married just before 2008, the crash, or right into the crash. That was very fortunate. So I don't discount the fact that I've been very fortunate in this business and in my life. So we get into real estate kind of serendipitously. It wasn't something we planned. My wife was watching an HGTV show while we were trying to figure out what the next thing for us was going to be. And so she said, well, while we're trying to figure out what that next thing is, why don't we flip a house? That sounds like fun. Didn't sound fun to me, but this was my future bride, so I was not going to say no, at least not till after the wedding. So I said, absolutely, let's flip a house. And so we flipped a house, and then 2, and then 5, and then 50. And we looked back a couple years later, and we realized, I guess we're real estate investors now. And so we flipped probably 400 and some houses over the last 13 years. Actually, I stopped flipping houses for the most part a couple years ago. We're still doing a few here and there, but we flipped a lot of houses. It's probably what I got best known for. I wrote a book on the topic, but over the last few years, my sole focus has been, as you mentioned, multifamily syndication, apartment complex syndication with my partner, Ashley Wilson.
Awesome. So how did you make that switch? I mean, obviously you were flipping houses, 400 houses approximately, give or take. And I mean, obviously that takes systems, that takes probably a good team to be able to do that. And you clearly had those because you even wrote a book on the subject, right? But there must have been a big switch at a certain point, because switching from corporate into starting flipping houses, that took a big shift. And I'm sure it took a similarly big shift, even though, you know, multifamily is real estate, flipping houses is real estate, but really they're two completely very different businesses and very different, you know, mindsets that come along with it.
They are. And I think I half joke about the fact that I don't particularly like real estate. I find real estate to be a grind. I find it to be tedious. I don't like to be down and dirty in the real estate. What I do love and what I think I'm good at is the business aspects. So I'm good at systems and processes. I'm good at scaling. I'm good at growing a team and managing a team and creating a strategy. And while single family obviously is a business and allows you to do all of those things, multifamily is much more of a team sport. And it's much more of a, you have to have a well-running business in order to grow a multifamily operation. So for me, multifamily really allows me to put those skills that I have and that I love, the business skills, the scaling, growing and managing and strategy pieces all together to grow something that's bigger than any one person could do themselves. I often say that flipping houses, while I didn't do it myself, a lot of people do. A lot of people, they swing their own hammer and they find their own deals and they list their own houses and they do their own scope of work and their own underwriting and everything. In multifamily, even if you wanted to do that, even if you were immensely talented and could work 100 hours a week, you probably still wouldn't be able to do it yourself. There's so many different aspects and so much nuance and so many different things that you need to be really detail oriented in that nobody has the time nor the specific skills to do everything themselves. I'm pretty good at finding deals. I'm pretty good at acquisitions and building relationships, but I don't have the skills of my acquisition folks. I mean, day in and day out, they're building relationships with brokers and they're building a pipeline. I'm a numbers guy. I think I'm great at underwriting. I'm great at analysis, but I pale in comparison to our underwriters who are the best in the business. I mean, they really know how to look at the financials. They know how to do forensic accounting on leases and really figure out how to get creative in making a deal work in cases where it otherwise might not work. I think I'm pretty good at due diligence and inspecting a property and coming up with a scope of work, but I pale in comparison to the folks that we have on the team that are focused on doing that day in and day out. I don't know if I'm a very good asset manager, but I probably could do it in the single family space if I needed to. I can manage contractors, I can carry out a business plan, but in the multifamily space, I pale in comparison to the folks that do asset management on our team. I'm pretty good at fundraising, but I pale in comparison to our investor relations person who is tremendously organized and can keep in contact with 200 different people at a time and know everything that's going on. And so at the end of the day, while I'm pretty good at everything in the multifamily space, I'm not nearly as good as anybody on the team that's focused on it day in and day out. I couldn't say that in the single family space. In the single family space, I probably was as good at underwriting as anybody else because it's pretty easy. I was probably just as good at raising money because it wasn't that difficult. I was probably just as good at putting together a scope of work because it wasn't that complicated. But in the multifamily space, I literally am not good at as good as anybody on my team. And that's why in multifamily, you really need a great team to be successful because every area is highly specialized.
Right.
So after all that, you probably say, what are you good at? It doesn't sound like you're good at anything. What I'm good at is figuring out the strategy. I'm good at figuring out how to build the team, how to hire the right people, how to put the systems and processes in place. Certainly, I do help with each of those things. I help with the fundraising and the investor relations. I help with the underwriting and the due diligence. But at the end of the day, Ashley, in my job, is to run the business and grow the business and to be strategic, not to be tactical. And that's why I love multifamily.
Yeah, that's a very good perspective on running a multifamily business and really any business in general. I mean, that's how you scale a multi-million dollar business, is having this kind of strategy in place and not just happenstance doing this and doing that. And even though I wasn't at the BPCon a few weeks back in New Orleans, I did catch the replay of some of the videos, because thanks to Bigger Pockets Pro membership, you get all the replays for that. And I listened to, you know, Brandon Turner in his keynote talked a lot about this very topic, which was, you know, finding, being the architect, right? Being that person who can now put everything in place and put everyone together and make sure not just running the company, but actually just advising and strategically making sure you're getting to the right place.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't get me wrong. There's a lot to be said for, Brandon, it's funny, Brandon's speech at Bigger Pockets, I was in Maui a week before, and I was chatting with Brandon about the topic of what he was going to speak. And he was talking about like the architect being up here at the top, right, and then the COO down below, and then the project manager and the DIY. And one thing I actually disagreed with him on was the hierarchy of visionary or architect at the top and then COO underneath. I very much believe that those two are functions that are at equal level in the company. Not everybody is cut out to be a visionary. I'm much less cut out to be a visionary than Ashley, my partner. Not everybody is cut out to be a COO, a chief operating officer, somebody that handles the operations. I'm much more COO than Ashley. We're mm-hmm. very much 50-50 partners. We very much hold the same level in the company. We're both equally important to the company, but I can't do that architect role nearly as well as she can. She can't do the COO role nearly as well as I can. So from my perspective, a lot of people, I don't want them to listen to Brandon. I want them to listen to Brandon. Brandon's a genius. But I don't want them to listen to Brandon about specifically the fact that you have to graduate eventually to architect or visionary in your mm-hmm. business. A lot of us aren't cut out for that role. And a lot of us will kind of fork off and go the COO, the more operations and tactical role. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's not a lesser role than being a visionary. It's just a different personality set.
Well, I think as you put it, I mean, it really has to do with finding a right strategic partner to be able to balance that, because you know, you may have a little bit of both. You may have maybe 70% of one and 30% of the other, but when you have another person to bounce the ideas off and to you know, strategize with, there's no comparison to have two sets of minds working 100%. On a problem. How'd you guys end up coming together? I mean, it was fairly recent.
I burned out on single family back in like 2017. And I was actually thinking about leaving real estate completely, just because I'd been so focused on single family residential, and I was tired of doing it. And I didn't see myself kind of rebuilding my career from scratch in real estate, because again, real estate, I just find to be tedious in a lot of ways. And so 2018 rolls around and I'm trying to figure out what to do. And I've got a lot of cash sitting because I was using all my cash to do deals. And the best place I always found to invest my cash was in real estate, but I was doing a whole lot less real estate. So I started investing in syndications. And what I realized was it was a great way to generate returns, but I'm a control freak and I don't like to trust other people with my money. So I realized that maybe the best avenue for me was I could have the best of both worlds. I could invest in syndications, but I could still have the control, and I could do that by doing the syndications myself. So I realized, hey, maybe multifamily syndication or some type of syndication was kind of a good path for me. So I decided to start investigating that. I remember that my friend Ashley, who I had met a few years earlier, was doing really well in multifamily, knew the space very well, was tremendously knowledgeable and successful. And so I said, hey, I'm thinking about getting into multifamily. I'm not positive that this is where I want to be, but I'd like to be exposed to it. Can I volunteer for you for a year? I mean, I'll do whatever you need. I'll help your business, whatever it takes. And in return, will you teach me the business? And she thought that was a very good compromise, a very good offer. And I thought it was a good offer. So we kind of teamed up. And so I spent about a year just learning the business from her and helping her out with her business and helping her out with some systems and processes and fundraising and things like that. About a year into that relationship, we came across a deal in Houston that she said, hey, I'd love for you to do this deal with me. Just come in. You can help with some of the underwriting and the due diligence and investor relations stuff. And I said, that'd be great. We'd love to do it. And so next thing we know, that deal closes. The deal goes tremendously smoothly. We're about a year into the deal and the deal is going very well. And we realized that we worked very well together. And she said, hey, would you consider like coming on as a partner? I'd love to partner with you. And at that point, I had been down and dirty in multifamily for about a year and a half, 2 years. And I realized I loved doing it. It was very well aligned with my skill set. Ashley and I, we're a great team. We have very complementary skills. We have very, very similar personalities. We value the same things. And I said, yeah, I would absolutely love that. So about a year ago, she and I teamed up officially. And so now we're partners in the business.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Did you see like a lot of the skills that you took from the fix and flips, the single families were transferable into the multifamily, or did you find it was you're really learning a new business entirely?
The process was transferable. It's the same high level pieces. You have to be able to find deals. You need to underwrite the deals well. You need to be able to find the money. You need to be able to get the deals closed. You need to be able to manage the process. And then you need to be able to disperse of the property at the end if that's your exit strategy.
Right.
And so from that perspective, the process is exactly the same. The details, well, that's where there's a lot of differentiation. Right. Certainly, let's start with like the first piece, which is the acquisitions piece. Certainly, there are skills that are transferable. You have to have a good personality. You need to be able to build relationships. You need to be able to build a deal pipeline. You need to be diligent and organized and all of those things. But then there's obviously a tremendous number of differences. In the single family space, deal flow is a lot simpler in a lot of respects. You're networking with a different set of people. You're networking with real estate agents and sellers directly. Whereas mm-hmm. in the multifamily space, a lot of times you're building relationships with brokers. And these aren't brokers that represent you. These are brokers that represent the seller. Mm-hmm. And so, and their interests are very different than in the single family space. In the single family space, brokers are very interested in doing volume. In the multifamily space, brokers only care about one thing, and that's your ability to close. If you don't close a deal that you're in the middle of, brokers in the multifamily space can literally lose their reputation. What people don't realize going into multifamily is when we do a deal, and this goes to another piece of it that's different. In the single family space, there's obviously due diligence. You have to run the financial piece and the underwriting. You have to walk the property and do an inspection. In the multifamily space, this can be a multi-week process. So you're doing a forensic analysis of the leases. You're doing an audit of literally every single lease. If you buy a 300 unit property, you're walking 300 units. You have to have contractors that are coming in that are basically going to displace every tenant in that complex for an hour or two or three over the course of a couple of weeks. And it's very disruptive to the seller and the property. Mm-hmm. And so if you get 2 or 3 weeks into a property and realize that the due diligence isn't working out and you're not going to move forward and you back out, the seller now has to start that process over again. Every tenant needs to be displaced again. Every file needs to be pulled and audited again. And sellers don't like that. And so if you pull out of a deal, the seller is not going to blame you. They may blame you, but they're also going to blame the broker who was the one that vetted you.
Right.
And that can build a very bad reputation for the broker. And so learning how the business works and learning how people's interests and needs and desires in the business are different from single family really makes you look at the business differently. So yeah, there are a lot of things that overlap, but there are also a lot of things that are very nuanced and different in multifamily. And it would have been very difficult for me to have learned on my own,
right.
Which is why I was thrilled to find somebody that knew it, that could mentor me.
Yeah, I think it's probably true to say with most people, that would be the best case scenario. You know, if you're looking to get into the multifamily business or any new business for that matter, find someone who's doing it successfully, and particularly maybe someone who hasn't been doing it successfully for like a few decades, you know, maybe someone who's been doing it successfully for a couple of years or a few years, and they're open to kind of taking on someone new, potentially as a partner, or at least to, you know, apprentice, because that's the way you're going to learn more than any other way. I think that was a very smart kind of tactic you used, and has brought you to where you are today.
Yeah, but you have to offer value in return.
Right.
It's people don't think twice when you apply to college and you realize you have to pay $20,000 or $50,000 or $100,000 a year, and you have to devote your basically full time to learning. But then when they think like somebody's going to mentor you for free and you're going to basically put in 2 hours a week, it doesn't work that way. I mean, anytime you want to learn, you need to be able to provide something, and it doesn't have to be money. You don't have to pay somebody to be your mentor or your coach. There are other ways you can do it, and we all have skills. And I've had people come to me in the past that have said, hey, I know nothing about real estate, but I'm really good at online marketing, or I'm really good at web design, or I'm really good at whatever it is, building financial models. Will you spend some time with me? And in return, I will help you by building your website or by building some financial models for your team or whatever it is. Figure out what that thing is that you're really good at. And that's something you can trade in return for mentorship and experience and learning.
That's great advice. And I think we can all take that practically, you know, figure out what it is that you're looking to do and then find someone who's doing that and offer them something that you have in return, like a barter system, so to speak, and you'll get on the board much quicker. Definitely get there much quicker. That's awesome. Do you see yourself, you know, now that you've found this the past couple of years, this new venture of multifamily? Obviously, you're kind of new to it relatively, right? Yep. But you are, you know, been successful, found another deal recently, and just keep going on. You know, do you see yourself in this role like for a long time doing this?
Yes. So one of the things that I realized early on is that unlike single family, where the cycle of a deal is 3 months or 6 months, or and it's relatively quick, and my investors or lenders are in and out pretty quickly, I can make that commitment without much thought. If I take on a flip project today, in 2 months, I may regret it. I may say, ugh, I hate to be flipping another house. I'm so sick of this. But I'm going to stick with it for 3 or 6 months to get it done. In the multifamily space, it's a lot different. It's a major commitment. And so I realized going in that if I were going to have investors that were relying on me for the next 2 or 3 or 5 or 8 years, that was a commitment that I needed to be able to make. And that was part of the reason why I asked Ashley to mentor me for a year as opposed to just jumping in, because I wanted to be certain that before I made that commitment to my investors, that I was going to be in it for the long haul. And so the commitment that I realized I needed to make was at least 5 to 10 years.
Right.
And so I decided I wasn't going to go into multifamily unless I enjoyed it enough and felt like I could make a 5 to 10 year commitment. Yeah. What I realized after about a year or a year and a half was that I did love it. And I was thrilled to make a 5 to 10 year commitment. But it's also because it's a very large amount of investor money. Sure. I also needed to make the commitment that this was going to be my sole focus. In the flipping space, I often did other things. I was writing books, and I was building businesses. I was doing some advising work, and so what I realized, if I'm going to have hundreds of investors be putting a lot of money and their trust into me, this needed to be my work, my right. life's work. And so what I realized was that I needed to cut many of those other things off my plate, and I needed to focus. And so, I will be doing this, and this will be my sole focus, or at least my main focus, for at least the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, for sure. And coupled with the fact that as a syndicator, you know, popular or maybe contrary to popular belief that you don't really make a lot of money until you sell the deal, right? The syndicator's equity is really, I mean, for a good reason. You know, yep. Sure, there's acquisition fees. There's something like that. You have to put bread on your table throughout the whole process. But the real money is made on the exit.
Absolutely. And this is one of the things that I love about working with Ashley. There are so many syndicators out there that are focused on the deal, focused on finding the deal, getting the deal, raising the money, getting it closed, and then celebrating. And Ashley and I very much have a philosophy in the business that closing the deal isn't the time for celebration. That's when the deal starts. That was the easy part. The hard part is the next 3 or 5 years, where you actually have to build value, and you have to increase rents, and you have right. to increase income, and you have to decrease expenses, and you have to make things more efficient. And she's probably the best asset manager I've ever met. And so it really forces us to focus on that second piece, not the acquisition, but the management. And so that's one of the reasons I love working with her, because we always have that focus on the important piece.
Right.
And I know we look back, and over the last 5 years, there have been a lot of syndicators who have made a lot of money. It's been hard not to make a lot of money, because when the market's pushing at your back, it's hard not to be successful. But at some point, things are going to soften. And I don't know if that's going to be 6 months from now or 6 years from now, but at some point, it's going to happen. And it's really going to be the people that can do that asset management, that can really make good decisions and drive efficiencies on the properties, that are going to be successful. Absolutely. And so I very much take this attitude with my investors that, look, yeah, this is great that we found a good deal, and it's great that we got it closed, but we shouldn't be celebrating yet. The hard work is just starting. And so that's kind of my philosophy.
Sure. The analogy of, you know, it's not about the wedding, it's about the marriage, right?
100%. I officiated my mom's wedding last weekend. And that was the exact message that was in my words, that today is just an event. It's not the important part.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations to your mom.
Thanks. Thank you.
Jay, I want to transition now to something we call the final four. And these are four questions I ask all my guests. The first question to you, and most guests actually know what they are beforehand, but we're surprising you today, Jay. So excellent. The first question is, what is the worst job that you ever had?
Oh, that's an easy one. When I was a freshman in college, summer after college, I took a job working for the Washington Post newspaper, cold calling, and this should have been easy. I was cold calling people, offering a free subscription to the newspaper. Basically, they just wanted to build their subscriber list because newspapers make money through advertising. Mm-hmm. And what I realized at that point was I was really bad at sales and cold calling. It terrified me to call people and offer them something for free. And it was the worst summer of my life. I dreaded every morning having to get up and start making phone calls and offering something for free to people. And it was a reminder to me the rest of my life that sales is such an important part of anything. I'm still not comfortable with it. I still don't enjoy it. I'm probably not very good at it. But I learned to respect it. And I learned to respect the value of it and how difficult it is. But that was by far the worst job of my life. It was a horrible summer.
That's awesome. And not the job, but the lesson learned from that job. Second question, what is a book that you've read that's given you a paradigm shift?
Yeah, there's a book called The Goal. And the subtitle is The Theory of Constraints, written by a process guy back in the, I think, late 70s named Eliyahu Goldratt. And definitely one of the most important books I've ever read in my life. It's all about in your business, the best way to scale your business is to focus on whatever your biggest roadblock is at the time, clear that roadblock, and then move on to the next biggest roadblock. It's kind of that the analogy, you have a group of kindergarten kids who are walking through a forest and some are going to be walking fast and at the front and some are going to be walking slowly at the back. And we shouldn't be focused on the ones at the front because they're not holding anything up. We should be focused on the kid that's going the slowest. We should figure out how to get him to move faster. And once we get him moving faster and with the rest of the group, then we focus on the next slowest kid. Mm. And that's how you keep the whole group moving, not by focusing on making sure the person in the front is the fastest, but by making sure the person at the back is not the slowest any longer. And the book, I mean, it does a great job of explaining it better than I did, but it's a great book for anybody that's looking to build a business, and real estate is very much a business. So again, it's called The Goal.
Okay. Fascinating. We'll definitely add that to the reading list and put that in the show notes. The Goal. I mean, that sounds fascinating. So we'll definitely check that one out.
Yep.
Third question is, what's a skill or talent that you would like to learn? And this can be anything.
I'll go back to the first question. I would love to learn to be better at sales and marketing, or not necessarily better at it, but more comfortable with it. And I know everybody says, do it more and you'll be more comfortable with it. I feel like I do a good bit of it in my own style, but still not comfortable with it. So yeah, sales and marketing is definitely that skill. And if I had to pick one of those, it would probably be sales.
Right.
That I wish I was a lot better at, because people equate the two. They're not really the same. So sales to me would be that one skill that I would love to be better at.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, Gary Vee differentiates between them very heavily, between sales and marketing. But really, in the end of the day, it depends how you look at it. Meaning, if you're looking at it from his perspective, marketing is sales. And and so they kind of go hand in hand. But if you know true sales, I think there's a lot of great, you know, sales books out there. In fact, we had an awesome episode on this podcast with Mark Hunter. He's called The Sales Hunter. And he wrote a very successful best-selling book. Actually, a few of them, but you go back and check out that episode. Awesome guy, actually, really incredible. I mean, he's been in the business of sales for decades and just, you know, crushing it. So check that one out. And to any of our listeners who are listening, haven't listened to that episode yet, highly recommend going back to Mark Hunter, The Sales Hunter. And fourth and final question is, what does success mean to you?
Success to me means being able to spend as much time as I want and need with my family. That was our goal when we quit our high-paying corporate tech jobs back in 2008. We did it not knowing what we were going to do next, but it didn't matter because we knew that whatever we did next was going to allow us to put family first and lifestyle first and business and work second. And I'm not going to lie, I occasionally lose sight of that goal. And luckily, I have an amazing wife and family that reminds me of it every time I do. But at the end of the day, that's kind of the goal, never to have to miss a soccer game, never to have to miss a piano recital, never to have to say I can't go on a family vacation. And so that, to me, if I can do that, then I've achieved everything I want and need to achieve.
That's awesome. Very well said. Can't agree with that more. And listen, it's been a pleasure. Jay, where can our listeners find you or reach out to you?
Yeah, very easy. www.connectwithjscott, just the letter J, scott.com. Connectwithjscott.com, and that'll link you out to my website, all my social media, and anything else you might be interested in.
All right. There you go. There you have it. It's been awesome, Jay. Any final thoughts, any final words for our listeners?
No, reach out to me. Anybody, I love giving back. I love helping people. So anybody that's on their journey and feels like I can be of help. I don't have a ton of time, but I'm always happy to help when I can. I hope people feel comfortable reaching out to me.
All right. Awesome. And to our listeners, thanks for joining once again on this journey we like to call a podcast. And remember, the best advice comes only when you ask. Real quick, I have one question for you. Did you like this episode? If you did, I want to ask you a huge favor. See, the biggest thing that helps this podcast grow and that will spread this message to the whole world is that if you leave a review, a rating, and subscribe to the podcast. What that does is it basically tells the platforms that this podcast is out on is that you like my stuff and I'm doing something right. So take a few seconds out of your day, hit that subscribe button, leave a rating or review. I would be extremely grateful. Also, I want to hear from you guys. So I want to hear some feedback. If you have any questions for future episodes, please find me on LinkedIn. Send me a DM, a connection request, Yona Weiss, and I'd love to hear from you.